You're listening to PorchDrinking.com's The Porchcast, brought to you by First Draft Taproom and Kitchen, located in the heart of Denver's Rhino Art District at 1309 26th Street, featuring a pour-your-own draft system with over 40 incredible beers to sample from. Also, Made by Chalk, who can help with all of your brewery branding, logo design, and website needs. And now, The Porchcast.
All right, everyone, and welcome to episode 54 of The Porchcast. We are broadcasting from our probably most boring location. We're here in a little conference room at the basement of a co-working space.
It's a bunker. It's great.
I figured it's Denver Startup Week. Might as well join all the nerds.
Yeah, and there are plenty of them.
Surround ourselves with all this talent.
Have you guys ever been part of Denver Startup Week? Have you actually seen all the craziness that takes place?
No, I haven't, though I was eating a sandwich this afternoon at Call, right by you guys.
Right down the street.
And who I can only assume was one of the owners of Topo was getting, like, ransacked by a lot of fanboys.
Oh, man.
I was like, all the fanboys. Look at you.
That show, Silicon Valley, have you guys seen that show?
Yes.
It's pretty much a spitting image of what the tech industry is like. Everyone wants to, when you're networking out there, people just want to know what series you're in, series funding, and I'm always just like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
My series is I'm seriously not interested.
Yeah. Ooh, zing. Yeah.
I'm seriously just drinking beer right now. So. Well, you're listening to The Porchcast. Welcome to a very special post-GABF edition of the show. Co-hosts today, Sammy Hartman and
Hello.
Sam Sly. Hi. I'm Tristan Chan. This is The Porchcast. Just a reminder to everyone who's listening, be sure to subscribe to all of your listening devices, whether it's Stitcher, Apple, or whatever weird frequency you're listening to us on. Be sure to subscribe. And if you like what you're listening to, give us a little positive ranking. If you don't like what you're listening to, well, then just...
keep your opinions to yourself. Yeah.
This is Trump's America. No free speech.
No free speech.
You can't say anything nice.
Don't say anything.
Get out of here.
Get out of here.
Just give us 5 stars and move on. Well, I want to say a congratulatory note to my co-hosts, both of them in the industry as well. You congrats on surviving GABF.
Just barely, by the skin of our teeth.
Did you get GABF'd in the A?
Oh, yes, in a big way.
Multiple A's.
That's totally what we should have asked Charlie, right? Yeah. Charlie, are you ready to get GABF'd in the A?
Like, explain to us what that means. Be like, what does that mean?
The most wholesome man in the
area. You.
Yeah, I mean, when I was falling asleep before the sunset on Saturday, that's when I knew that it was time for the week to be over.
Time to close the book on another week.
Time to close the book. I was like, wow, I'm drunk.
Sammy, how did your week go? You of the two of us, you did not have to go to the actual festival itself, but I know you had a million events going on. Tell me some of the highlights.
Yeah, I mean, this is for the third year in a row. We at Cerebral don't pour at the festival just because, I mean, we figure to drive.
Our beer's too good.
It's way too good. No, but, you know, to bring people to the tap room, and so it's my responsibility to, you know, be visible in the market. And, yeah, I probably did 8-9 events. Two of them at Finn's Manor, which is just not only the greatest place on the planet, but also just a death hole for me, where, like, dreams go to die.
You know, it's funny you say that. I definitely want to hear more about the Finn's Manor events, but Finn's Manor in particular is this weird dichotomy because, you know, give all credit due to Tommy. Is it
Yeah,
Tom,
it's Tommy.
Tommy Merrill?
Taylor.
Yeah. Tommy. Puts together, he assembles one of the best beer lists in the city.
Undoubtedly.
You know, shout out to our homies at Hops and Pie. They do a killer job as well. And they've been with us, ride or die with us, since the very beginning of Porch Drinking. But, you know, the folks at Finn's Manor have curated such a fine beer list. And they also have a killer cocktail program to boot.
Yeah. I mean, their bar program is outstanding. And every single time I'm there, I just marvel at the wall of all of the spirit. I mean, that they've got a whiskey selection that could stand up against any of the finest cocktail bars. I mean, they mix a great cocktail. The ambiance is great. Anytime the sun sets, that's when it's time for me to leave.
No, that's what I was just going to say.
Yeah, it's like all of my favorite humans that live in Rhino or are visiting the Rhino or blah, 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 blah.
It becomes a werewolf town.
Yes, it
certainly
does.
Where all the bros come to party.
But up until then, it's my favorite place in the city, without a doubt. Yeah, so we had a hazy versus clear night on Tuesday night.
And that place was hopping. I saw line out the door
for that. Yeah, it was freaking bumping. It was awesome. Got to drink a lot of great beers. And then...
out of the out-of-state haze craze...
Man, Fort George, man. Fort George is one of the bangers for sure.
Washington, correct?
Yeah, it's a story. No, it's Oregon.
Oh, Oregon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They're some of the homies. And then they were pouring some of the Almanac hazy IPAs as well.
Oh, nice.
Holy cow. Just like great, great, great stuff. On Saturday, we just had like a little event. I mean, I don't know. It was fine. It was great. But by that point, I was like, can I have a glass of wine, please? Like, I will take anything that isn't a beer. But yeah, it was Fort George, Almanac, OMF, Us True on Saturday, I'm pretty sure.
Cool.
And then, yeah, did Pinewood Derby at Ale House on Wednesday. That was one of the highlights, without a doubt. A really well-organized Pinewood Derby race, just like you.
Industry.
It's industry only. It's just like a freaking Boy Scout event.
But it's not like a name for something else. They're literally just doing Pinewood.
Yeah, I mean, they call it the Canwood Derby because you have to incorporate an aluminum can, beer can of your choice, into your car. But yeah, they give you a Pinewood kit just like they would if you were a Boy Scout, and just another like super fun with all the homies, you know, when you can just go and hang out with friends and rep the brand. Yeah, I think that it was just a hugely successful week, and I am still recovering actively.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you're nursing International Waters Pilsner from Cerebral.
Mm-hmm. Dry hop Pilsner, it's delicious. Mm-hmm.
Sam, how was your GABF? I know I saw you in the festival hall.
Yeah.
Did you have a chance to enjoy the festivities, or were you working your ass off like the rest of us?
I was there purely on beer and loathing business, so
nice.
My work... It involves enjoying the festivities, so I got to mix a little business and a little bit of pleasure all together. So I had far too much fun and filmed way too many things that probably could have been deemed inappropriate if we didn't have media badges on. So I like to hide underneath my cloak of darkness for that. But no, it was fun. It was interesting this year since it was alphabetized. And
I want to get into that here in a second. But before we do, I want to share a little some behind the scenes story stuff, because I feel like people like going behind the cloak a little bit to see what goes on in the industry.
Totally.
Under the
behind the curtain.
Behind the curtain, yes. And well, first and foremost, we talk about we all survived. Well, I have to admit, I'm quite literally a bit hobbled right now. I discovered that I'm pretty sure I have the gout.
He got the gout.
I got the gout, guys.
He got the gout.
So my my doctor,
unpure.
Here's how this all goes down. So this is probably the third major flare up I've had in the last year. And the first time I went to see my doctor, I think it was just far too late in the process, but. You know, started developing this pain around my big toe, saw major inflammation and like couldn't walk very well. So I go in, get tested, and he says, "You're all clear. It's just this weird inflammation. Take some Advil, take some Tylenol, and you'll be fine." And sure enough, it went away within like a day. But this was probably like a week or two into the process. So he's like, "Ah, it's not gout. You're lucky, whatever." Well, after the Weldworks Invitational, I get the same kind of inflammation in my toe.
Same place?
And I still just, same place, and I just kind of put it off, keep taking Advil, and it ended up lasting for like a month, which was just obscene. But like, I was like, no, my doctor said it wasn't gout, and really it was just, I think, denial. I think at that point it was just denial.
Oh,
but so here enough, you know, right after the Weldworks Invitational, then right after GABF, two of the largest drinking events in the country.
Sure shit.
My big toe is back. You know, it's ridiculous. They call it, you know what they used to call the gout back in the day?
What?
The rich man's disease.
And isn't that the truth?
Isn't that the most ridiculous thing? Like, I feel so ashamed to admit this on the airwaves, but I have the rich man's disease.
I thought your shirts have been looking pretty nice lately, actually.
Yeah,
I just didn't
want to
say anything.
Just from eating all the shellfish and drinking all the beers.
I'm telling you, I just think that it is just so funny. And in the industry, too. Like,
oh, yeah.
When somebody's got the gout, you're like, yo, you got the gout. I'm just grateful. Because I really did. For a hot second, I was like, oh, man, my foot hurts. Like, this is it. And I did a little bit of research. And we ladies are not affected until postmenopause, so I've got two or three more years. I'm fine.
Yeah, estrogen. Maybe take some estrogen. Maybe that'll fix you up.
Great. Yeah, no, it's funny. Like, the more people that I talk about it with in the industry, the more I realize that there's a lot of people who have gout in this industry.
So we need to start like a gout anonymous group, like a GA group.
Or I think more so we should we should start like a Freemasons gout fraternity. Yeah.
Just hobbling.
Yeah.
Along.
Show each other our badge by like showing each other our like our wheelchairs and stuff.
How big your toe is this week.
Yeah. Yeah, you have to flash your big toe.
Yeah, exactly.
Creepy.
Like touch toes too, that's your secret
and
handshake.
It's just going to be some weird like foot fetish group, and let's not go down that route. Okay, let's get back on track a little bit. Some weird stuff, some cool stuff that happened during GABF. Well, first and foremost, everybody who's listening, if you haven't already listened to our podcast with Charlie Papazian right before GABF, this was his final GABF with the Brewers Association before his retirement. As many of you all know, he was the godfather of this entire event. He founded the Great American Beer Festival. He founded the Brewers Association. He founded the American Home Brewers Association. He really is the OG when it comes to craft beer. So check out episode 53 with Charlie Papazian if you haven't done so already. But, you know, one of my favorite things about this week is you get to see so many of your legends and idols in beer. I caught Charlie in the hall on Friday, and it was awesome. He was like, hey, let's take a picture together. You know, I gave him the traditional fist bump, and he gave me a fist to the face in the picture, which is hilarious.
I saw him on Monday night at, like, a Rocky Mountain PBS thing.
Oh, yeah?
I was with my folks, and we just recorded, and I was like, Mom, Dad, like, that's Charlie Papazian. And they were like, you have to go talk to him. And I was like, I don't know. Like, he's not going to remember me.
Yeah.
And sure shit, he was like, Sammy, porch drinking. I was like,
oh,
yeah,
that's
man, awesome. And
he was like,
are these your folks? And I was like, yeah.
That's
he was like,
so
I can
cool, tell.
I was like, I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but thanks. He did not punch me in the face.
Oh, well, lucky you.
He didn't really like you then, I guess.
I know. That's obviously the key.
But did you all see any of your other beer idols this week? I ran into Garrett Oliver in this random event that we attended, which was really cool. Brooklyn Brewing did like a takeover of the bell tower, the Lanny's Clock Tower.
Cool.
Nice.
That was really sweet. And, you know,
top?
Yeah, we got to go up to the top of the clock tower. We had this killer view of the city. Garrett Oliver rocking his corncob hat.
Of course.
You know, just being dapper, dapper as hell and being super nice. And we were drinking some killer Brooklyn beers. I at that point, I was drinking lager.
Yeah.
The lighter, the better.
Yep.
Yeah, but that's also, it was at that party when I was pretty well sauced that I ran into arch nemesis Michael Kaiser.
Did you really?
Of Good Beer Hunting.
I wouldn't even know that dude if he walked up and slapped me in the face.
Yeah, it's funny. I had seen him earlier in the week, and I had never come across Michael Kaiser before. For those of you who aren't familiar, he's the founder of Good Beer Hunting. You know, for the longest time, Good Beer Hunting was kind of like the publication, I feel like, in this new wave of digital publications. You know, they were kind of the new age, like the young guns who had really done a really good job. And, you know, I still all to this day will say this, they put out tremendous content. They do a really great job in the long form story format. But the beef that we have with Good Beer Hunting is that they just take shots at people all the freaking time. And also, they are they're indirectly accepting Anheuser-Busch money, which is complete bullshit. And what? So, for those who aren't familiar, Anheuser-Busch started a partnership with, I can't remember, Pitchfork. I think it was Pitchfork, called the October Project. And Michael Kaiser, independently, in quotation mark, is an advisor for that publication. Mm. And so, you know, you can say that he is acting independently as an advisor, but really, like, that bleeds over. And you can tell through their social media interactions and how they attack people whenever people call out Anheuser-Busch. Like, they always run to the defense. The classic example of that, there was an article on Porch Drinking a while back where it casually mentioned campaign contributions that Anheuser-Busch gave to both political parties. And we didn't tag Good Beer Hunting. We didn't tag Michael Kaiser. We didn't tag anybody related to it. This was like an article that came out 3 months prior. And 3 months later, Good Beer Hunting just screenshotted this like little segment and just like put Porch Drinking on blast and put my writer on blast. And so I was just like, oh, hell no.
Oh, hell no.
And so we were just like, really, like, out of nowhere, who punches down like that? Like, who goes sit after down. The little guy?
Yeah.
With as big of a platform as Good Beer Hunting, like, why do you waste time, like, drumming up old articles and attacking people that, like, you have no business attacking? Like, it's just ridiculous.
Big guys going after little guys? I don't know.
Sounds very familiar. But anyway, so ran into Michael Kaiser, and you know,
you had never met him before?
Never. Well, I had met him earlier in the week briefly, and I met him at Ratio, and I was like, hey, man, just wanted to introduce myself. Like, I'm Tristan. I'm the marketing manager here at Ratio, and I also run Porch Drinking. He's like, wait, so you work for Ratio, or do you work for Porch Drinking? I'm like, no, I do both, because most people in the industry, you know, wear multiple hats like you do with Anheuser-Busch and Good Beer Hunting. And
did you say that?
No. But he like, you should have seen like the dirtiest look that he gave me when I said that I founded Porch Drinking. Like, he's like, oh, cool. Never heard of you guys. Like, kind of like brushed us off. And I was just like, yeah, sure. I'm very sure of that. But I saw him at this Brooklyn Brewing event, and I wanted to extend the olive branch, because I feel like when people meet in person, you finally, like, you break down this, like, this wall that you hide behind on the internet, and you get to know people better. And also, I had been drinking a little bit, and so I was just like, hey, Michael.
Social lubrication was running strong.
Yeah. I was like, hey, Michael, I feel like we might have gotten off to the wrong foot. Like, I know that there's some weird stuff on the internet, but, like, I didn't want to make that, like, weird between us. Like, I just want to say I'm a big fan of your all's work, love your all's content, blah, blah, blah.
We're on this together.
And he's like, I don't know what weird stuff on the internet you're talking about, like, playing this, like, dumb game. And I was just like, well, cool, whatever. I just want to say, like, I hope things are cool between us. I really admire what you do, blah, blah,
he
blah.
He really played coy?
Yeah, absolutely. Hmm. But, you know, like, I want to hope that this is, like, the start of the turn of a new leaf with him, because really this industry is all about collaboration and, like,
for sure,
helping each other out. And like I said, I'm a big fan of what they've created. I just wish that they wouldn't, you know, be so defensive about things. And we saw a lot of that during GABF. We talked about, like, the Wicked Weed incident. I want to get into that here in a little bit. But yeah, it was weird. Like, you go from the Garrett Oliver interaction, which was always so dandy and pleasant, to this, like, weird, like, awkward Michael Kaiser dance. Also ran into Chris Fernari of Brewbound as well. Really cool to meet that guy. And, you know, he's also this guy that I haven't met before that has done so much for the beer journalism kind of field. But, yeah, those were kind of my, like, behind-the-scenes kind of things.
Dig it.
Yeah. Did you guys have any interesting, weird, fun interactions with folk?
I didn't see anyone really, like, beer famous.
Yeah.
Except for, I did see Garrett Oliver in the hall.
Yeah.
Except for, I don't know what I was even, like, doing or where I was going, but I was walking with somebody. I'm like, that guy's kind of a big deal. And just, like, as we passed.
Yeah.
Like, didn't even stop to say, hey, it looked like he was going somewhere. I'm not super bold when it comes to, like, going up and just talking to people.
Because really, like, what are you going to do? Be like, hey, I know you.
I know, exactly. I've read all of your books.
Remember that time?
But I haven't even read his books. I'm an asshole. Like, I just know who he is. It's like, hey.
This is a big deal.
Remember that time you did all this neat beer thing?
Yeah.
And, like, everybody knows you now? And
my friend slammed a 08 Monster on camera once. How cool is that?
Yeah, pretty badass, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, other than that, I didn't see, to my, that I remember. Man, I can't clear out my my chesticles here. No, I didn't really see anyone that I could say. I just saw people I already knew in the industry, and just I kept running into everybody I knew. So, except for Brian from Chain Reaction, he's like the only person I didn't run into. Hmm. And he was trying to find me because, you know, I had a camera and he likes to take over my interviews and just run around with my microphones.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
I mean, less so beer heroes, just more like fangirl moments. To be lucky enough to work for a brewery that like brings in these collabs, and like I rolled in on Friday to work behind the bar for the first time in 8 months, which was an experience. And Bottle Logic was like at Cerebral.
That's crazy.
You know, collabing, and they couldn't have been nicer. You know, Phil is one of the head brewers at Almanac, and they were in, and Dave from Fort George. Just all these people that you just like regard everything that they're doing and everything that they're standing for, and you're like, this is awesome. All of you guys are awesome.
Yeah.
Like, let's all hang out and drink beer. And the cool thing is, so on Saturday after award ceremony, I was sitting at the bar minding my own business, just trying to be quiet. And though we were open, but nobody was bothering me, and the door opened and this guy walks in with a gold medal, and I was like, hey, congratulations.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, buy this guy a beer. I went up and I shook his hand, and he was one of the guys from Tin Roof that won gold for Hazy Pale Ale. And
no
I was
way.
Like, that's like, welcome.
Yeah.
And it was, they were, Tin Roof is out of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and they're the first Louisiana craft brewery to win gold in anything.
Dang. Really?
Anything. And I was like, get on that.
And
like,
they won
that
for
is,
the Hazy
yeah,
category.
Yeah, Hazy Pale Ale. It's like, get on that, man.
That's
awesome. Is so badass. So that was just a moment. I mean, you could just see like the pure, pure pride.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, see, that's what this industry is all about. Like being recognized, and then him coming like straight to Cerebral to like try the beer. It was super cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I definitely want to take us back on track a little bit. We're going to touch on some of the big storylines that emerged from this year's festival. We're also going to kind of, I know, Sam, you were in the festival hall, so you and I will touch on some of our like hidden gems and secret finds. And like, Sammy, I also want to hear a little bit more on some of your favorite beers from throughout the week as well. We're going to take a quick break. This is episode 54 of the Porchcast. We'll be right back in just a moment. Hang tight. This is the Porchcast on PorchDrinking.com. You're listening to PorchDrinking.com's The Porchcast, brought to you by First Draft Taproom & Kitchen, located in the heart of Denver's Rhino Art District at 1309 26th Street, featuring a pour-your-own draft system with over 40 incredible beers to sample from. We also want to take this opportunity to remind you about our friends at Made by Chalk. Chalk specializes in creating brand experiences for the craft brewing industry. From product packaging to websites, apps, and events, Chalk services are tailored for independently owned craft breweries, maltsters, and industry-related consumer products. If you're looking for premium branding for your brewery or a new concept for your web design needs, visit madebychalk.com. Once again, that's madebychalk.com. All right, folks, and welcome back to episode 54 of the Porchcast. This is a very special post-GABF edition of the show. Just a reminder to follow us on all of your listening devices. Subscribe so that you can hear future episodes. Our next episode is actually going to be coming pretty quickly. We're going to have Jesse Brookstein, former co-host of the show, back on. He's in town from Wisconsin, and we're excited to welcome Jesse back to the team for a limited engagement.
One night only.
I saw him at the awards ceremony. He actually shouted me down, and it was so nice to see him. So I can't wait to
That's
do that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, let's jump right into it because we don't have much time here. So real quick, I want to touch on some of the big storylines from GABF this year. Sam mentioned it earlier. The first one, alphabetical order versus geographical in terms of the layout of the festival. Sam, what was your thought on that arrangement?
Going in, I was actually excited because I thought that would help. I don't ever make a plan. I tried that route before, and that's just not how I operate. I just wander around aimlessly and just look for breweries that I kind of think I know or just find short lines. And I thought this would help me, you know, find places easier. It seemed actually a little more confusing, partly because they had the brewer section still, or meet the brewer section, and that was in alphabetical order along with the main hall, which once you figure it out, you know, you look at the hall sign and it says, you know, M through O or whatever, and then it says meet the brewers. So you can identify right. it, but then it was still laid out kind of funky. Like the islands didn't seem to flow like it felt like. It didn't feel like it didn't feel alphabetical, basically. Like but
I felt the same way as you, actually, Sam. Entering the festival, I was like, you know what? Generally speaking, I know exactly which breweries I want to check out. I know this new like layout will help me find them a lot quicker. And additionally, you know, over the years, cell reception has gotten a lot better in the hall. So if you have friends that are looking to meet up, they can you can be like, hey, let's meet at so and so brewery.
Right,
you can go straight there without any problem. But the whole kind of wrench in the caveat in the whole situation is that there is this meet the brewer section in the middle of the hall, which completely throws everything off. So like, you know, you're looking for Orpheus and you're like, oh, I'm gonna go to the letter O. But then you're like, oh shoot, I should have gone to the letter O in the meet the brewer section because they're in the meet the brewer section.
Yeah.
How big was Meet the Brewers? Is that like 20 or is that like 50?
I'd say closer to 50.
Definitely more in the 50s. A little bit bigger.
So there were definitely some, you know, I'd say like Fiction, Fremont. Like a lot of breweries that, you know, you would think that would be in the Meet the Brewers were, but then there were some, you know, like Ratio, for example. We've been in the Meet the Brewers section for the past, I think, 2 or 3 years. Yep. And this year we elected not to be in the Meet the Brewers section. So it could definitely throw people off, and it did. And so I had to then jump into the GABF app and like type in which brewery specifically so that I could see exactly which section they're in, blah, blah, blah.
That's what I should have did. There was one specific brewery I was trying to find at one point because I thought I saw a person I knew from Twitter that worked at that brewery, and I thought they might be there because I didn't think why else would he be in Denver.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, N was in like this Bermuda Triangle. You'd go to the M section in like O, but N was way off in this corner, not even anywhere.
Really?
It was, I don't even know how that one worked out, but we actually accidentally found the N section when we were looking for someone else. Oh, here's N.
Cool.
Yeah, they're not here. Okay, cool. Problem solved.
Well, the next, you know, that was kind of the prevailing theme going into it. And then some of the stuff that happened right as the festival kicked off, we actually got a hot tip that Wicked Weed, one of the breweries owned by Anheuser-Busch, was going to be... So at the festival, Wicked Weed was pouring. We got a hot tip that their display sign this year denoted that they were owned by Anheuser-Busch. And so we went over, took a photo of it, which was, you know, kind of been the consistent theme with these ABI-owned breweries at events now. A lot of people are either putting the independent bottle on independent breweries, or they're, you know, clearly distinguishing that, you know, a brewery is owned by Anheuser-Busch or so, you know, some other entity, depending on what the brewery is. And so then we got another tip that shortly after setup began, Wicked Weed covered up the Anheuser-Busch portion with their own beer signs so as to obscure the fact they were owned by Anheuser-Busch. So we went and took another photo, and we happened to tweet this out on our Twitter feed. And after, you know, a day or so, I forget who it was. I think it might have been after Focus on the Beer retweeted it that it really started getting some steam. And we got, you know, a couple of major publications that shared it out as well. But, you know, people were having a heated debate on whether the BA should have allowed Wicked Weed into the competition to begin with, whether it was hypocritical of them to say, like, oh, we're going to take money from Anheuser-Busch and have you guys participate, yet still be so antagonistic towards Anheuser-Busch. But the only argument that we were making through this tweet was the fact that, you know, Wicked Weed was clearly ashamed of their ownership and trying to obscure the fact that they're owned by ABI. And that's really the only point that we're trying to make. People are welcome to discuss other elements and other sides of the story, but really all we're saying is they're very consistently following this message of obscuring and confusing consumers. And that's all we're trying to point out. The one thing that I will say is, like, dudes, like, Anheuser-Busch, we know what you are. This is the Great American Beer Festival. These are some of the most educated beer fans in the country all gathered in one place. Like, stop trying to hide from the truth. I think what the point that us as Porch Drinking is trying to make is ABI needs to stop, like, hiding and, like, being shadowy and, like, trying to, like, confuse consumers and just own who they are. Like, just be who you is.
Yeah, man, own it. Like, you got to lean into it. Like, if this is your game, lean into it. I'm sorry, but, like, none of that plays anymore.
No.
It's almost like they're just having an identity crisis, you know?
Yeah,
we want to be craft, but we don't want people to know that we're the big guys, so we got to...
We all know.
Hide the big guys, yeah.
And so just be like, even if you want to be craft, just, like, call them out. Like, just be like, hey, look, we're craft based on our definition. We don't care what the Brewers Association says. Like, we're still making great beer. Like, enjoy the beer. The beer's the same. Like, we're still using the same ingredients, so they say.
Stick to that narrative.
Yeah, stick to that narrative crafted. And just, like, own it. Like, don't try to, like, try to dip on both sides of the playing field, you know? Like, it's ridiculous. And I will say, later on in the weekend, the other kind of major headline was that at the awards ceremony, our social media guru kind of picked out and saw this in a freeze frame that when Cloudburst Spring went on stage...
That shirt, man.
when they were accepting their award with Charlie Papazian, one of the guys opened up a shirt and revealed is it?
Yeah, it said fuck AB.
AB InBev.
It was a hard F.
It was a hard F.
Fuck AB InBev shirt.
And he was like, oh shit.
And so we actually broke that. We tweeted it out and we posted it on Facebook and shared it out. But I will say, Tin Barrel Brewing actually.
What the issue is that about?
I thought this was kind of clever.
Did you?
I thought it was kind of clever in that they were owning it and saying, like, hey, next time you want to, like, coordinate outfits,
right,
reach out to us beforehand.
Blah, blah, blah.
I thought that was kind of funny. I thought it was kind of
that's
clever.
That's some decent trolling, actually.
Yeah,
that's
it was some pretty sincere trolling.
Unrelated to all this, outside of the 10 Barrel facility on my way here today, there was a Bud Light truck sitting there.
Oh, classic. Absolutely.
Again, I see you.
Well, let's jump real quick into our last segment where I want to talk a little bit about some of our favorite finds, some of our best beers that we tried during the week, and in our case at the festival. Any standout breweries for you, Sam?
Of all the breweries, I went to a bunch of, like, no line breweries, basically.
Yeah.
Like, if there was a line, I kind of avoided it.
Sure.
And I am not good at chronicling what I do. Like I said, I'm usually just wandering around. The video we were doing for Beer and Loathing was just... It had its own little mini narrative, so I wasn't really focusing on the beer that much. But my favorite one that I did do was... I was over by the West Facts brewing booth, and I was talking with their marketing manager, Brian, and he looks at me, he's like, you need a beer, don't you? I said, yes. And yes. So... What I ordered was a 50-50 split of their hazy and brut IPAs. And
dude, that hazy IPA was really, really well done from Westpax. For those who maybe have overlooked them a little bit here in the Denver scene, you should totally give them a chance, because I think a lot of the stuff that's been coming out of Westpax has been really, really solid.
I've had the brut on its own a few times, and I thought that was really good. And I did that mostly just to be an ass. But actually, it was a good mix.
Good combo.
Gave it a little extra bubbliness because hazies are not that they're flat, but they usually don't have that much, like, carbonation feel to them.
Sure.
So I added some bubbles a little bit of champagne-iness to it, and then add a little fruitiness to the brut. So
nice.
That was my favorite.
Cool. For me, it was all about, you know, I always approach GABF. We take a look at the pour list ahead of time because we always do the research. And then based off that pour list, I kind of scan through and look at the beers and say, like, what are some breweries that, based on the beers that we're looking at, could be really amazing or could be really in over their heads? And generally it kind of reveals the trending up breweries that are really kind of the under the radar. You know, people may or may not have heard of them, but, like, they may be, like, trending upwards, like the next hot brewery. For us, some of the big finds this year, Ouzel Finch out of Virginia, making some killer hazy stuff, but also their sour program's on point. talked about, I kind of teased Orpheus earlier. They've been around for a little while in Atlanta, but their stuff has gotten so, so good. I think they made one of the best barrel-aged stouts of the entire festival.
Nice.
Kind of on that same note, they also made some killer spontaneous stuff as well. But on the same note as barrel-aged stuff, Uni Annie Brewery, which their Uni Annie is kind of their sour side, and then Hubbard's Cave is their is their clean side. And with the Hubbard's Cave barrel aged beer, I think it was like a ancho chili pepper beer or whatever, but it was freaking fantastic. Yeah. That was awesome. I loved, we tried Hot Butcher for the World for the first time out at the Weldworks Invitational, but had them again here in Denver for GABF, and their Blazed Orange Milkshake was incredible. So, so good. All of their haze is really, really good. They're out of Chicago. Ology Brewing out of Florida was killer. We'll have more on our like full list of like standouts on Porch Drinking, so you should check that out. But Sammy, what about you? Throughout the week, what were some of your major standouts?
Man, I had a few. On Monday, I had a hazy night at Dunbar, and it was like all of Four Noses, Outer Range, et cetera, et cetera, mm-hmm. New Image, us. But they also had tapped Automatic from Creature Comforts, which is pale ale.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm sorry, but can I have one of those? kick ass. Anything that Creature Comforts
love
makes,
Creature Comforts.
I cannot get enough of. I had a super fresh Tropicalia later in the week, too, that just knocked my socks off. And then, again, I mean, towards the end of the week, I was done. I was totally done for. And so the Freem Pilsner.
I love that Pilsner.
Like, get out of here with that beer. It scratched all of the itches. It was exactly what I needed. And then, back at the homestead, back at Cerebral, we popped some bottles. Fundamental observation from Bottle Logic
that
is
beer's so good.
Just so, so, so good. Everything that I had was awesome. Three-way from Fort George. The freaking Pilsner from Almanac, too. I was drinking light and easy all week. I also had a lovely rosé that I really enjoyed as well.
Save that one for wine drinking.
Yeah. I can't go through best beers without mentioning that peanut butter media noche, peanut butter cup media noche from Weldworks was one of the best beers of the entire weekend. Like, you know, I am a little wary of peanut butter beers, but man, that flavor profile was just so nuanced in this edition of it.
Was that just rare beer, or was that
no? It was at the festival. Shit. It was insane. They also had the spaghetti goza, which they paired with a slice of pizza.
I had to let Jake in the building because he had a stack of pizzas on Thursday.
That's
amazing. He was curious to open the door
so
for him.
It was very bizarre. It was very interesting.
Did it work?
Paired with pizza, it worked spot on. another on the note of really unique and interesting, kind of odd beers, there was a Fernet beer that Forbidden Root had done in Chicago.
I would drink that.
In collaboration with Fernet Branca. And that beer was spot on. All like the awesome like botanical notes of Fernet, but without like the weird, like harsh aftertaste. But it tasted exactly like Fernet. It was so, so good.
It was like a Saison? Forbidden. Like, what was the...
It was like a dark ale aged in, like, a Fernet barrel. It was insane.
That sounds incredible.
But, yeah, shout out to Forbidden Root. That was crazy and really good. And then also, there's, like, this troll beer that came from Jay Wakefield that was, like, green in color. That ended up being... I think it was, like, a Berliner style.
Sure.
But it was so good. That kind of recaps, just from a high snapshot, some of our favorite beers from the Great American Beer Fest 2018. I know we got to cut this one short, but we'll be back. A big thank you to Sammy Hartman and Sam Sly over here for joining us for episode 54. This has been The Porchcast. We'll catch you later.
Adios.
Oh, sorry. Check you later.
There it is. Like what you're listening to? Be sure to follow The Porchcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and whatever listening devices you may follow. You can also follow Porch Drinking on Twitter and Instagram at @porchdrinkingco.